And as the restrictions start to truly get imparted, it's no longer the exchange requiring you to say that this is your address. Now it's the government actually going and enforcing that these exchanges only withdraw to addresses owned by that user that owns the account. Mm-hmm. Now you have this challenge of proving, yeah, it's me, it's my address. So what's a good way to do that? Well, cryptography kind of gives you a pretty good way, which is a signature. Mm-hmm. You know, here's the address. That address has a corresponding public key. I can sign a message that's given to me by the exchange, sign that message, send it back to the exchange along with my public key, and they can prove that it's my private key that signed it.
I live unbanked off of cryptocurrency, and I use Bitrefill extensively because it lets me pay with crypto at places that don't yet accept it directly. This one service, more than any other, helps me live on crypto. Pay your prepaid phone bill, or buy gift cards to thousands of major retailers around the world, all with cryptocurrency, including for exact amounts so you don't have to buy more gift credit than you need for a specific purchase. You can use Bitrefill without an account, but if you get an account, you can earn rewards points, which translate to savings, and you can also hold a balance denominated in dollars or euros to protect yourself against market crashes. Go to bitrefill.com, click Create Account, and enter the referral code DCN. Or follow the link in the description. Hey everyone, I have the fantastic pleasure of speaking with the one and only Paul Puay once more. How's it going, man?
I'm the one and only. I'm like an NFT, right? Aren't we all NFTs in a way?
Like, you must have watched my last podcast.
Fully non-fungible. Every human is non-fungible. No two are alike.
For now. Just saying.
For now, until they're going to solve goddamn cloning technology.
Yeah, they're going to solve the fungibility issue with humans and make us make truly fungible, you know, humans.
I think that the clones and clones.
Yes.
But even that won't be truly fungible because I'll scratch one human, one of my clones, and it'll be a little bit different than me. But anyway, yes.
Nice to be back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. I'll just not go down that dark rabbit hole. But yeah, so I just wanted to have you back on this thing because there's this thing that came out of nowhere I'm just going from the media perspective. And there was a giant stir caused in the crypto community, and it already almost seems to have gone away. And I feel like it deserves a proper breakdown of what actually happened. So the AOPP, which is just EIP 1559 or all these other acronyms or that people don't
a rap song.
Yeah.
Down AOPP. Yeah. You know, me.
Of course, but it didn't last long enough for people to even remember what it was. But basically, Trezor and a few other wallets, notably Trezor and a few other wallets, came up with this thing called the AOPP or implemented something called the AOPP to assist in some advanced KYC measures required by certain exchanges in certain countries. And a lot of people freaked out over that instantly, so that within a day or so, Trezor backed off. I noticed Edge was on the list, and I was saying well, Paul seems like a reasonable guy. I should dig into this if Paul's on board. And so that's exactly why you're on here, as is to break down the entire AOPP issue.
We were the sole supporter that didn't back down.
You're the only people still doing it.
Although we never actually implemented AOPP, ironically. So the other wallets actually implemented it. It was actually in their code. And then they took it out. Whereas we were on the roadmap to implement it. It was actually supposed to be a pull request submitted to us by some of the original protocol, founders and whatnot.
Yeah.
Just we hadn't received the PR yet to evaluate it. But I'm in agreement with the idea of the protocol. Mm-hmm. And I do, though. I mean, I put out on Twitter, I want to understand people's concerns. One valid concern was brought up. And with that, I said I would only implement the protocol with a specific change. We can go into that detail a little bit later, but overall,
let's just go right into what is the AOPP? What does it stand for, and what does it constitute? And then we could dive into the more details of it, because there's a lot of it does X, and it's a lot of nuance. So what is it?
There is definitely a lot of nuance. I think to better understand what it is, people have to understand why it came about in the first place. And so it came about due to the travel rule. And so this is some regulation that got imparted onto centralized custodians of cryptocurrency, primarily exchanges, centralized exchanges that hold people's money. And that travel rule states that in order for that centralized exchange to send out a user's money, they have to be sending it to one of two types of entities. either another centralized custodian that has KYC'd their users, and they know the exact user that they're sending it to, and they have to transmit the KYC information of the source user. So for example, if I had an account with Kraken and Joelle, you had an account with, say, Binance, if I send funds to you, my KYC information is actually going to get sent to Binance. So Binance knows who the money's coming from. And Binance has to have your KYC information, which matches up with who I want to send money to. Right? Yeah. So it's KYC on both sides. And we all hate that term. It's like, you know, the original bad three-letter word, you know, KYC, know your customer, personal information, all the stuff that you want to keep private is just getting sent over the wire. This is what the traveler rule is stating with respect to cryptocurrency. So that's one way that an exchange can send funds out of the exchange. But then the second way is such that they're sending it to the actual user that's already KYC'd with the exchange. So they're allowed to send it to public addresses owned by the user. What you're not allowed to do, and this is already true today with many exchanges, independent of the travel rule, they state that, once again, if I had an account with Kraken and I say, Kraken, please withdraw one Bitcoin to this address, that address cannot be owned by you, Joelle. Right? That's my account. I can only withdraw it to an address that I own. Right now, they're not verifying that ownership. They're just like copy and paste an address. And I was actually just on a show with Naomi, and she's like, I did not know I couldn't do that. I was totally doing that. And apparently, it's violating the terms of service of these exchanges. Yes.
Yeah, but why did she say that live?
Not all of them. Note that not all of them have that requirement right now because the travel rule isn't widely enforced. We're kind of in this phase where exchanges have a few years to get it implemented.
So really quick, who implemented the travel rule? Which regulatory body? And who does it apply to around the world?
So at minimum, my understanding, this is, Dave, someone please clarify this for me. If this is going on YouTube, put it in the comments, whatever.
Absolutely. You know,
My understanding is that globally, it is not widely required. Right? The travel rule isn't widely enforced.
So who wrote it? Whose rule?
Who wrote the travel rule? Oh, it's a consortium of many different government entities. Okay. Right, it's all the anti-money laundering, anti-fraud, anti-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah, all, you know, the alphabet soup, 3-4-letter agencies around the world have come together to say, oh, we're going to enforce this within the financial institutions in our country. So multiple jurisdictions have come up with this concept. And one thing to rewind about is that this is already true for banks.
Yes,
banks already have to do this. When you transfer money between banks, the banks have to know the KYC information, transfer the KYC information to the recipient bank, and that recipient bank has to have KYC the users of that bank. So it already exists for banks, and custodial crypto companies are banks, right? But without the FDIC insurance above, but they effectively are banks. So all they're doing is applying the same regulation that exists on banks onto cryptocurrency banks.
Yeah.
That's really what they're doing. Like, not much different in that regard. In the same sense, if you went and wanted to withdraw money, you could only do it to yourself. If you go to a teller and say, I want to withdraw cash, it better be you that you're withdrawing it to. You can't go and sign a note, give it to your mom and say, hey, mom, go withdraw cash from my account. Right? They're not going to do that. That's the equivalent of putting someone else's public address into the withdrawal of an exchange.
So if you give your buddy your ATM or your partner ATM your card. ATM card with your PIN, you know, is that a crime, by the way?
Go look at the terms of service. Whether it be a crime or not, it may not. It's likely against the terms of service of the actual bank.
All right. Yeah, but everyone does it.
I don't.
Well, I don't either for completely different reasons. I don't know about everyone. I don't have a bank.
I don't, just because I don't even like walking up to an ATM in the first place. So anyway, that's this kind of like the backstory. This is the rule that already were applied to banks. And then we all don't like banks. I want to get rid of banks. No question about it. But it's a rule applied to banks. And now it's getting applied to crypto banks. So where does AOPP come in? Without AOPP, it's hard for a user to prove that they actually own that address. And as the restrictions start to truly get imparted, it's no longer the exchange requiring you to say that this is your address. Now it's the government actually going and enforcing that these exchanges only withdraw to addresses owned by that user that owns the account. Now you have this challenge of proving, yeah, it's me, it's my address. So what's a good way to do that? Well, cryptography kind of gives you a pretty good way, which is a signature. You know, here's the address. That address has a corresponding public key. I can sign a message that's given to me by the exchange, sign that message, send it back to the exchange along with my public key, and they can prove that it's my private key that signed it. Is that a hardened proof? In actuality, it's not even that hard of a proof. For example, I can go to my Kraken account and copy and paste your address, Joel, I put it in there, and then they give me a message I need to sign. I send you the message and you sign it with your private key, give me the payload, and I send it back to the exchange. So is it really a good proof? No, not really. Is it good enough for the government? It is in Switzerland, at least. I know that. We have a partner in Switzerland that actually lets them do no KYC purchases of Bitcoin if you sign a message with your address.
Right? So that's no great. KYC if you KYC?
No KYC as in you don't KYC with the exchange. You've KYC'd with your bank. So many people don't know this, but right now, one of the exchanges in Switzerland who we've partnered with actually allows for zero KYC to be sent to the exchange itself to buy up to $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. The caveat is you have to sign a message proving that you own the private key of the public address that the funds are getting deposited to. Yeah, that's actually integrated into Edge today. It doesn't use AOPP. It just uses kind of standard Bitcoin message signing. But in a way, that actually alleviates aspects of KYC. And once again, is it a hardened proof? No, you could fake it, but it's good enough for the government. And hell, if it's good enough for the government and it prevents the need for KYC to the exchange, hell, why don't we use it, right? Might as well use it.
Yeah.
So where does AOPP come in?
Let me hit that get a little detail on that thing. So when you sign the message, we're just talking about the no KYC purchase thing, right? Mm-hmm. This exact example.
This is specific, though, to a specific exchange in Switzerland for European users. That's a very specific. Exactly. Nothing to do with AOPP or the travel rule, just so you know.
So that exchange, when you sign the address saying you owed it, what constitutes you in this? What constitutes you just your full legal name and that's it? Do you have to add?
No, the message doesn't even have that. The message is just, you know, it's just a nonce and you're signing it. And you just haven't seen that message before. You just know that that message is random enough that you have not seen it before. You've never created a signature for it before. And now you have to sign it with an X amount of time and send it back to the exchange.
And so basically when you create the exchange account, because I assume you have to create an exchange account even if you don't have to KYC.
With this specific exchange, literally you ask to buy some Bitcoin. You say how much you want to buy and the bank account number that the money's going to come from, which they will know anyway, because once you send them the money, they'll know the bank account number. So you say the bank account number that the money is going to come from, and then they provide a bank account for you to send money to. It's a push payment. It's not like withdrawing money like here in the US.
Yeah.
They provide a bank account number, and then you go to your bank app or whatnot, and you send money to that address. Before you do that, though, they will, I should rewind. So, okay, you say how much you want to buy. I want to buy, you know, $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. And in part of that, you put in your bank account address where the money is going to come from. And then they provide a message. And this happens invisibly inside of Edge. But if you were to go directly to their site, by the way, this exchange is called Bitty, BITY.com. If you were to go directly to their website, they will say, okay, boom, here's a little bit of a message. Please go and sign it, which means copying and pasting it into an app like Bitcoin Core. Signing it with the exact private key that corresponds to the public address that you then paste into the website. It's a terrible user experience.
Yeah.
Horrible when it's not integrated into a wallet. That's all hidden inside of Edge. So in Edge, we do the signature automatically, send the message back. User doesn't have to see any of that. And then you send money to the exchange, and then Bitcoin shows up inside of your wallet.
So when they get the money, obviously they get it from, when they get the fiat, obviously they get it from a bank account. Do they check and see if it's the same name for the owner of the account as the name that's in the signed withdrawal transaction? Like,
they check that it's the same bank account number.
Yeah.
So you provided your source bank account number, and it better match the bank account number that you sent the money from.
Yeah. And so as far as like the actual signing of the message on your crypto, that actual element, basically where are they correlating that it is you who's sending it, the you and the you? Like,
it's the fact that you're proving you own the private key. Admit, you're right. This is actually a very poor proof.
Yeah.
And I remember when I talked to the founder of Bitty, and he was telling me this is coming up. He's like, Paul, we're going to be able to do purchases with no KYC. You want to partner and launch this together? And I'm like, hell yeah. How do you do it? And he told me, He said, oh, you just need to sign the message, this message. I'm like, that's it? Yeah. Like, that's not even a good proof.
So I'm basically,
like, all right. But he says, but don't worry, it's good enough for the government. I'm like, all right, great. If the government wants to be stupid, then sure, we'll happily bow down to their stupidity if it's in our favor and we don't have to provide a KYC. Perfect. It's only for European residents, by the way, but still, you know, it's,
yeah, it's a good start.
So we're super happy about
it. But so the bank KYCs you, because obviously you have a bank account. You need KYC to get a bank account. And instead of just going through the annoying hurdle of re-KYCing with the exchange you want to buy on, they just lean on the bank's KYC to authorize a transaction, kind of. They're just like, well, if you got a bank account, you know, that it's so... It's not getting you out of KYC. It's just making fewer entities you have to do that with, less of a pain point. Which
it's also less of a security risk because the exchange doesn't have your information. If the exchange gets hacked, there's no KYC information for them to give up. Mm-hmm. Right. So it is more secure to your privacy than if you had to give your KYC to both the bank and the exchange. Mm-hmm. And really, this is what all exchanges should be doing. Right. I mean, why isn't Coinbase this? Well, the Kraken do this because if I'm going to transfer money from my bank, the bank knows who I am anyway. The bank of a Kraken also receives that KYC. Kraken does it, but their bank receives my KYC. So if I send from like a Wells Fargo to Kraken, which might be using, I don't know, Bank of America. Well, Bank of America now has my KYC information. Mm-hmm. So if they ever needed to, there is an entity that has it. So it's almost overkill to also have the exchange collect it. Yeah. Anyway, but that's how it works in the US and in Switzerland, and with how they can cover the general Europe jurisdiction, they don't need it for small purchases. So this is $1,000 or less per day. They allow you to do this. So with that same jurisdiction, this is where AOPP came out of. It came out of Switzerland. I know the people personally that are proposing the protocol. Lucas Betzchart, he's a longtime Bitcoiner. He actually worked with us years ago at Airbits for about half a year. He runs the huge Zurich Bitcoin meetup. He's been doing that for years. He's had big speakers like Andreas Antonopoulos there. I've been able to speak there. He's a key part of the community, and he's a big, big staunch Bitcoiner. Mm-hmm. So you're not getting a protocol coming out of what I'd call, government, right? These are Bitcoiners coming up with this protocol.
So what does AOPP do? Yeah,
exactly. So where does AOPP come in here? AOPP is simply a way to make the signing of that message more standardized and easier. So if you went directly to Bitty's site, Bitty, once again, that whole thing we were talking about with $1,000, no KYC, that's not exactly relevant to AOPP or the travel. It's just something that they came to agreement with the European and Swiss government to allow for these no KYC. But anyway, the user experience of signing a message is terrible. If you wanted to withdraw money from, say Kraken required this message signing in order for you to withdraw money, you would have to go to Kraken, copy and paste your public address, put it into this field on the website, and then Kraken would generate a message. You have to copy and paste it into your wallet, sign the message, copy and paste the signature, put that back into Kraken, and then say, Kraken, please withdraw my money. Sucks balls. And all that's going to do is cause people to just leave their money on an exchange. We already know it's hard enough to convince people to get the money off the exchange in the first place. Right? So many people, they buy it, they're like, oh, I own the Bitcoin. That's good enough. Even though everyone told me to withdraw it into a harder wallet or into Edge or whatnot, I'll just leave it there. And then now you're trying to tell people to go through this like four-step process to withdraw it. They're just going to leave it there. And so,
of course, and they tend to do that.
And they'll absolutely tend to do that. And so really what you're doing by being a critic of AOPP or saying that it's compromising privacy and it shouldn't be supported is you're just making the user experience much, much harder and horrible to get money off the exchange. And the privacy advocates that are saying that this is a break of privacy and this is a terrible privacy compromise are really encouraging now the ecosystem to leave money on the exchange, which is an even worse break of privacy than removing your money, being able to use a mixer, being able to convert it to other assets and private privacy coins.
Which, by the way, funny you should bring that up. Mixing right now on my phone as I speak.
There you go, which you wouldn't be able to do if you left your money on an exchange. So
yes.
That's the inverse of what will happen if we don't pass a more standardized, easy to use protocol, a user experience that people can already do without the protocol. Why make it hard for people to withdraw the funds? So I want to at least bring up some, you know, I have a pretty strong stance on this, but I did
Yes.
invite feedback on this protocol. Like,
Okay.
where are the true privacy concerns?
So before
I
we get
asked that
into
on
that,
Twitter.
let's hit the details of what exactly happens. So in the past, what has done is you have to copy and paste the address or a message into your Core wallet or whatever. You sign a thing, you get that signed, that transaction signature, and you put that in the exchange to prove you own the address. So what exactly does AOPP do instead? And what is,
Got it. So what AOPP specifies is now a URL encoded as either a QR code or a button. Much like a Bitcoin address can be encoded as a QR code or a button, and you would tap the button, it would launch into your wallet. The wallet would now have the public address for you to send money to, and then you create a transaction, sign, message, broadcast it, or scan a QR code, and then the public address is in the QR code. What AOPP is saying is here's a standard format by which we could embed in a URL or URI a request to send us an address alongside a signature, and here's the message. So in an AOPP request, there is basically a message that they're asking you to sign and a location to send that signature, which is basically a web server. So when you scan that QR code or push that button, it then launches into your wallet. The wallet sees the message, signs the message, and then sends the corresponding public address of the private key it used to sign the message. It sends that over to the URL specified, which is directly to the exchange. AOPP runs no servers that have anything to do with this protocol. They see none of that information at all. It's purely between exchange and the user. And no one in the middle really sees any of that data. Not the signature, not the message, not the public address, none of that.
So
That's user experience.
it's entirely user initiated, meaning you have to scan a QR code or you have to click on a URL and open it with your wallet. Is that right?
It even improves the user experience of getting the address over to the exchange. So imagine if you have a
Copy and
mobile
pasting.
app, which generally are more secure than the desktop apps, and you have Exchange on your laptop, and the exchange says, paste your address here. What would you have to do? Well, if people are in the Apple ecosystem, you know, Apple's made it easy for you to like literally copy on your phone and paste on your desktop browser. That's kind of an exception. For people that might have mixed systems like Android on a Windows box, I had to do this. I've literally had to go into my mobile app, copy the address, email myself that address, open the email inside of a browser, copy that address, and then paste it into the Exchange website. It's a royal pain in the
Yes,
ass.
I do a lot of that stuff on a weekly basis. Definitely not through
Exactly.
email, but something
It's
similar.
not. Imagine if the exchange just simply had a QR code, you scanned it with your phone and a proof, and that's it. And the address automatically gets sent over. So ironically, there is a protocol called the Request for Address Protocol, Request for Payment Address Protocol, which Edge and BRD and Bitwage collaborated on in 2015. And it does the exact same thing as AOPP, except it doesn't have the signature part. It's just get the address over to the website. So that way the website can ping me. AOPP is kind of taking it one extra step further and requiring a signature. So meaning I send the address over, but also here's a signature proving that the private key is held inside of the user's app, which once again, it's a really, really weak proof. But if it's good enough, it's good enough.
Well,
So
before we launch
That's
into
the
the
user experience of AOPP.
yeah, before we launch into the argument section, the last point of clarification. So, what percentage of exchanges today make you do any kind of signing? Like, it's not.
I don't know of any
Yeah.
that make you do it mandatory, other than if you use Bitty and wanted to do no KYC. I could be
Yeah.
wrong, and if Switzerland has now, I could be wrong in the sense that it's possible Switzerland has now required Swiss residents
I
and Swiss
heard
exchanges to
somewhere
do
on
that.
Twitter that they did, but I haven't verified that.
Yeah, I haven't verified that either, but it's very possible that they have, and that might be the reason why it came out of Switzerland, because like, they needed something to allow users to get their money off the exchanges, you know, in a simple, easy way, and
So is it
so.
possible? So far it's very few exchanges are actually requiring this, but it sounds like from what you were telling me earlier that within a couple of years, every single exchange will need to do something like this or the government will crack down on them. Is that the way it's going?
That's my understanding from all of the news that I've read and the announcements of what is the travel rule and when it would get implemented. And so there's this grace period. We're in this kind of great unknown duration grace period where right now exchanges aren't required to, but it's one of those, it's coming. And governments are basically giving these companies time to build some infrastructure to transfer this information back and forth between themselves and to build things such as AOPP and standardize it across various wallets. And so when it's exactly going to be enforced, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But based on what I've heard in the news articles, it seems like it eventually will be.
Yeah. So now let's hit the arguments part of that. Why are people mad?
Honestly, I don't know. But here's what they're saying. Mm-hmm. I hear everything from this is a huge compromise of our privacy to, oh, we're bowing down to the government. And so to that, let's take each argument one by one. The compromising of privacy. If you're dealing with a centralized exchange that's implementing AOPP, you have already given all of your personal information to that exchange. You've KYC'd mm-hmm. with them. They have all that information. Them having you sign a message is not giving them any more information than they already have. And it's not giving that personal information to anyone other than who already has it, which is you. And that exchange, it's not going anywhere. It's not going into a blockchain. It's not going to a central repository. And I will fault AOPP for creating the absolute worst demo on their website. Mm-hmm. It looks like the way the website looked like is that all of this personal information was just like line by line on a database. It looked like a database dump of tons of people's names, addresses, phone numbers, email address. It was the worst looking demo. Because it looked like AOPP was holding that information and that became a central repository, but it wasn't that. And having talked to Lucas, he said, no, that's what the exchange would see. Like the exchange, which already has that information, would see that, oh, this information, this KYC information that we have has a signature, and here's the signature. Right? And they verified, and here's the address that they signed with. It's like their internal dashboard inside of the exchange. But he showed it in a way that really misled a lot of people to think that, oh God, AOPP has this information or there's this central repository that any exchange can tap to automatically have their someone's KYC information. And it was absolutely untrue. Like that couldn't have been further from the truth. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the criticisms was that, yeah, you're compromising our privacy, which fundamentally I don't think, and I know we are not. There isn't a compromise of privacy.
Because we didn't have it to begin with.
What's that?
Because we didn't have it to begin with if we're using an exchange.
You already lost your privacy the moment you gave it to the exchange.
Yeah.
So I'm not pro-centralized exchange in any way, shape, or form. I'm trying to get people off the centralized exchanges. Let's use DEXs whenever we can. Hey, use BISC. You know, you really, really try to improve your privacy. However, I also accept that if you've compromised it, you've already compromised it, and AOPP is not making it any worse. Then it comes the argument of, oh, we're bowing down to the government and blah, 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 and helping them enact regulation. No, that regulation's already enacted. We're not making it easier in any way. We're making it easier for people to not be so drastically affected by it. All right. That way they have an option to get their money off. So people that still choose to use a centralized exchange, but want to get their money off of it and want to be able to then use things like the mixer that you were using, they actually can, and they can do that in a much easier way than this weird manual copy paste signing of messages. I have no clue how this is in any way, shape, or form bowing down to the government. And then the third argument I get once I say those two things is, oh, it's a slippery slope. First, all they're asking for is a signature, and then they're going to do this. Well, now you're projecting into the future, assuming that wallets and exchanges that implement this we'll implement something far worse than this. I don't think that's a fair projection, right? We're evaluating each protocol as that protocol stands, right? And doing this doing A doesn't mean we're going to do B. Like it's such a huge leap for there to be some other protocol that mandates full KYC where there wasn't any, right? Where there wasn't any to begin with. And so people can't even give me an example of what this future protocol might be, this future regulation might be, because we've done A, which because we've done AOPP, what is this worst thing that's going to come down the pipe? What's the slippery slope? I don't see one. Right? I mean, there's other things government can do, but I don't see how AOPP is going to enable that, this other slippery slope.
Yeah.
So I will give credit to one criticism. And so I like to give credit where credit is due. And when I put out on Twitter the comment, request for comment saying, I would, you know, with this big tweet thread that I created this huge tweet thread explaining everything that I've just said here right now on this podcast. And at the end, I said, with that, I would love to hear people's actual concerns and feedback on the protocol that truly show privacy issues with the protocol. And I really didn't get a whole lot, but except for one thing, which was from the Blue Matt, one of the core devs of Bitcoin Core.
Yeah.
That guy. And he said that one possible issue is if the message that the exchange is requesting that the user sign, if that message contains user information, such as name, address, phone number, blah, blah, blah. My initial response was, so what? It's just going to the user. Mm-hmm. It's like the exchange is showing my personal information on a browser. Like, all right, what's the big deal with that? And he did bring up one good point, which is very subtle. It's very nuanced, but I agree with it, which is by putting that information into a button that I could tap to launch my wallet or into a QR code, or especially a button. If it's a button on mobile that launches into my wallet, what happens if a different application services that URI? Mm-hmm. Just like you may not experience, you know, in Android, when you tap on a payment link, like a Dash payment link, it could launch any of your Dash wallets. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, what if, and on iOS, it's terrible because iOS determines which app actually gets launched. You can't choose which app. That's one of the criticisms of iOS. Well, what happens if you want to sign it with, say, Edge and some other random app that you don't like, your banking app or whatnot, decides to service that URI? Now that app sees the personal information that they necessarily shouldn't. Well, a banking app probably has your personal information. What if it's like a social media app for some stupid reason?
Yeah.
Services that URI. Now they know all that personal information. I'm like, all right, it's nuanced. It's kind of very, very much a corner case, but I'll agree. And so I publicly stated that we would only support AOPP. And once again, we do not currently support AOPP at Edge, but we would only support it if the message to be signed is a fully random number with no personal information, such as a 64 character hex value, right? And the wallet can validate that. And that's part of, if that's actually part of the spec, which says the exchange has to send a 64 character hex value as the message to sign, then I'd be okay with it. So that has not been changed in the protocol spec, although I did bring that up with Lucas. And he said, okay, interesting. Let me bring that up with the other people that had written the protocol and see what they think. And in his eyes, it's up to the exchange to determine the message. However, I would say if you promote a protocol where it's not up to the exchange, they have to send a random value and you proliferate that around as a standard, that's actually better than having people copy and paste messages from the app and have it signed by Bitcoin Core, because Bitcoin Core will sign anything.
Yeah.
You know, if it got name, phone number, it'll sign absolutely anything. Whereas by enforcing at the protocol level that it's a random number, then the wallet won't sign it unless it fits what looks like a fully random number. So now you can actually improve privacy over the shittier option of just a random message that a user has to sign. So with that change, I'm all for the protocol, and I have not found a good criticism of the protocol, even whether on a privacy level, on a bow down to the government level. I just don't get it. And I think it was a total knee-jerk reaction for wallets to remove support for it. I mean, Trezor removed support, but their original founder, Elena, was all for it. Obviously, she doesn't work at Trezor anymore.
Of course.
And I think this is an example of companies just bowing down to people bitching.
Yeah.
Not actually asking themselves, what are they bitching about?
Yeah.
You know, do they have a valid concern? And are they even the majority, or are they just the loud minority? Are they the squeaky wheel? And admittedly, we probably have lost users by stating publicly that we're for AOPP with this one change. I'm sure we've lost users. People have said, I'm deleting and uninstalling Edge, removing my money and sending it to Samurai, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I can't help but think that I'm not in this industry to just bow down to acquiring millions of users. I mean, in this mm-hmm. industry to make change.
Yeah.
You don't make change by enacting what people complain about that don't understand what they're complaining about.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, let me throw a few devil's advocate type or, you know, devil's advocate criticisms.
Absolutely. Let's do it. You might change my mind. Just like Blue Matt, you know, I was yes. able to change my mind slightly on the protocol.
Yes, because this is not something I've necessarily made my mind up on. Obviously, I had the same knee-jerk reaction of, you know, anything in a self-host, like a self-custody wallet that's not KYC to introduce KYC without knowing.
You're not introducing any KYC yes. in a self-hosted wallet, by the way. Just so you know, there yes. is no KYC in a self-hosted app with this protocol. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but just say, like, it's just like the caveman response of, like, I don't, it's coming into, okay, bad. Like, I understand that and kind of have the yeah. initial emotional
the
reaction.
Knee-jerk, I get it.
But
I get the knee jerk.
But so here's some things. So first off, let's address the timing of this. So a responsible company in the space says, look, this is coming down the way. We are trying to get ready for when it happens. And so we're being very helpful and responsible by helping people get ready before every exchange has to do this. Now, the devil's advocate part of that, you know, the criticism, the critic's advocate, right, of that is, well, we're coming up to compliance. We're providing the tools for compliance before compliance is even necessary, because this hasn't been widely enforced or implemented, because we're during this grace period. And so the idea is, during this grace period, a lot of things could happen. There could be a lot of pressure for regulatory change. There could be a lot of other things. And especially if it starts, and no law, the law is only worth its enforcement. And a lot of times, despite, like, this law is a law, it's like, as we've seen with, for example, cannabis, there's a lot of, I guess, in some ways, civil disobedience and other things that have affected real
yeah.
practical policy.
Cannabis,
change.
COVID, you name it. I'm yeah. all about civil disobedience when you don't agree with something.
And more importantly, cannabis is, as far as I know, still illegal in the entire United States, according to the federal. But according to the states, some states it's not. And according to the states where it still is, it's large. It's, I would guess, way less enforced than it ever has been in the history of this country. But so the idea is, what if we wait? What if we have AOPP in the back, but no one touches it, no one implements it, and we try to make sure it's never necessary, and only once every exchange requires this kind of signing thing, then we come out with AOPP and say, let's implement it now.
Sure, but I think that, I don't know if there's much of a difference there.
Could be.
So I'm like, what difference does that make in the long term? So the existence of AOPP, you would have to argue that the existence of AOPP will make it easier for the regulation to actually get enforced and enacted. If that were yes. true, then I see where you're going, right? Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, not to kind of diverge into another yes. very, very hot topic, but the wearing of people wearing more masks makes it mm-hmm. easy for governments to say masks are required.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that I could understand by people saying, okay, I will go ahead and comply. Then it's easy for us to go ahead and actually for the government to go ahead and mandate masks. Mm-hmm. So that part I would agree. You comply, it's easier for them. Will building AOPP make it easier for the government to enforce the travel rule? And that's where I don't think there is a connection there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't give a damn about AOPP. There's nowhere that this protocol will in any way, shape, or form affect their decision and ability to enforce AOPP, because it's enforced at the exchange level.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exchanges that they're harping on. It's not the self-custody apps.
Yeah.
Right. There's nothing that that travel rule does to affect actual self-custody apps. It's entirely the exchange. And guess what most exchanges want? They don't want you to move your money out.
Mm-hmm.
They love it when people leave their money there. They can go and leverage it just like a bank.
Mm-hmm.
They make sure that way that when you do want to touch your money and you want to trade it, you trade it there. So exchanges aren't actually, it's not really in their best interest to implement AOPP in the first place because it gets money off of their service, which is where they want to keep the money. Mm-hmm. And so therein lies the argument. So if you're saying that implementing of this is bowing down to the government and making it easier for them to enact a regulation that isn't currently enforced, I would like to hear a scenario where how in the world is it make it easier for the government to enact this and enforce this regulation? I can't seem to make that connection.
Let's take a hypothetical here, right? And obviously, a lot of this is always like fuzzy because I don't really use exchanges. So my my knowledge on the exact ins and outs of how it works is not necessarily sharp. But imagine this. In a couple years or whatever, the travel rule gets fully enforced or whatever, the maturity of the travel rule comes into effect. And every single exchange in the U.S., let's just take the U.S. for an example, now requires you to sign a message proving ownership of an address in order to withdraw. And at that point, almost no customers know how to do that, whether it's they don't know how to sign a message using their Trezor, they don't have Bitcoin Core, they don't anything like that. And so now they're just like, what do you mean I can't get my money out? I here give you the address and like I can't figure this out. And the user experience friction of that causes enough of an uproar that causes enough pressure on, say, legislators, many of whom are crypto holders and users themselves, that then they end up causing policy to be rolled back. Now, as to the other nuance of your argument, that they might just not withdraw at that point. But it depends, I guess, with the pressure. Some will still want to withdraw, will complain, will cause a stir. Some won't and will just have the self-custody. And I guess the gamble of the criticism, the critical argument, the gamble of that is there will be enough pressure of people trying to withdraw, being unable to efficiently do so, and that they will say, this is onerous, you got to roll the regulation back. And therefore, and then this doesn't even become a thing in the long run. It gets rolled back or something. So that's what I would say that critical argument is.
It's a hell of a leap. I mean, nothing's impossible for sure. And I think it's, I mean, this starts to dive into opinion for sure. And a lot of this is opinion, definitely.
Of course.
But looking at the landscape of how users behave today, like let's just actually look at the landscape of how users behave today. Vast majority of people using centralized exchanges just simply don't take their money off.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So what percentage of people, if every single person that normally takes their money off were to bitch about it, what percentage of crypto holders that use exchanges? So first of all, you have like three kinds of crypto users, right? Mm-hmm. People just don't use centralized exchanges, period. You know, maybe like you got the Joel Valenzuelas in the world, right? So they're absolutely in every way, shape, or form, pretty much not affected by the travel rule, at least not directly affected, right? Indirect ramifications aside, you're not directly affected by it. Then you have the people that use crypto exchanges and withdraw their funds to self-custody apps, which I think I fall into that category, right? And then you have the people that use crypto centralized exchanges and just leave their money there. By all accord that we can tell, that's a vast majority of people, maybe not a vast majority of funds, but a vast majority of people. And each person is one vote, right? So one vote per person. So that's a vast majority of people. They're by and large not affected by the travel rule anyway. And so who is affected? The minority that normally would take their funds out. And is it a loud enough minority to reverse the travel rule? We're talking about a globally coordinated multi-government piece of regulation that already applies to existing banks. Mm-hmm. And it's just simply getting applied to crypto banks. And then I ask you another thing. Mm-hmm. Do we actually want it rolled back? So this becomes another slippery slope because it's like, Paul, are you just actually saying that, you know, regulation is good?
Yes.
Generally speaking, no.
Different slopes and different ways you could slip.
Different slopes. And so I know someone's going to like completely hammer me for this, but so be it. I share my opinion.
If you didn't like it, you wouldn't be on Twitter.
Yeah. And I think I've actually said this on your show before regarding the travel rule. I'm not entirely against it because the travel rule prevents people from using custodial wallets as payment services. So take, for example, Strike, right? Fully custodial Lightning wallet, House of Satoshi or Wallet of Satoshi, I believe. And I could be getting some of these. I know there's a bunch of different Lightning wallets, like Wallet of Satoshi, Blue Wallet, blah, 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 blah. And many of the Lightning wallets are fully custodial because it's hard to do non-custodial Lightning.
Yeah.
Technically speaking, the travel rule will make those custodial wallets completely dead. Because I can't just go arbitrarily pay somebody else without having to do the whole KYC from the source. You'd have to, the custodial wallet have to KYC me, send my KYC information over to the recipient. That recipient would have to be KYC'd. It would 100% kill custodial wallets as a payment mechanism. And then now custodial services are more like vaults and exchanges, and that's it. Thereby forcing people from a payments point of view, from a utility of cryptocurrency, to use self-custody tools. Independent of AOPP, completely independent of AOPP, it kills a custodial product and forces people to use self-custody products. I'm kind of all for that.
Yeah, I kind of see it
going. I'm not for regulation, but I'm for anything that drives people to custodial, to self-custody solutions. And the travel rule effectively does that. So do you want to unwind the travel rule? Or do you just want to make it where the travel rule doesn't really affect us?
Now we're in
because
the world,
we have a protocol that makes it buttery smooth to get your money off the exchange.
We're in the world of speculative predictions here. And I would predict
this isn't speculative though. Like if the travel rule is enforced, which by and large it looks like it will be, it is not even speculative that it will kill custodial payment wallets. It absolutely will kill custodial payment wallets. There's no way that it won't.
Well, there's another way, which is more people, it puts more payment services, etc., in the custodial world. So where you're paying from a Strike user to a Strike user, that's all the same thing. Or they already have pay with Coinbase and things like that at merchant checkouts and things like that. So it might force more people into the closed loop KYC ecosystem rather than kill the KYC providers for payment use cases. Now we're into KYC payments, which is already, you know, a thing. If you connect, pay with your Coinbase wallet directly, pay with your whatever other custodial thing, we're already back in custodial payments today. And I can't see, like, pay with crypto.com. I can't see that going away because of the travel rule. I could predict that it will cause the opposite effect due to the large network effects of these kinds of providers, that then the merchant apps will then join the KYC custodial ecosystem, and then it'll just be that nice neat buttery smooth Visa card, we're back to banks kind of thing. So that's how I see it going. It could, again, we don't know until this actually happens which way it'll go.
We don't, from a viewpoint of peer-to-peer payments, that I'd still fundamentally think would be broken. So being able to send a Lightning payment to just another person would be very, very broken. You would be stuck with, you know, Strike to Strike users.
Yeah.
And the like. So so this is, admittedly, you're right. There's some projection. You're like, which way will the world go?
Which slippery slope?
Which slippery slope will the world go? And this is really a fork on the discussion. Like, hey, do you really want the travel rule to go away or get enacted? And whether or not you want it to be enacted or go away, now comes the earlier question of what effect does AOPP really have like on whether or not the travel rule gets enforced? It really comes down to that question. How much impact does AOPP have on enforcing the travel rule, given that it affects a, you know, arguably smaller percentage of the population that use centralized exchanges, like number of people, not necessarily funds. There's huge funds that use centralized exchanges that do withdraw, like the big, huge traders and the OTC whales and whatnot. But individual people who have a vote, most just leave them there. That's what we're seeing. We've seen that for years. So there is some, like, you know, some aspect of trying to predict, but I don't think it's too far to predict that. It's not a huge leap of faith to think that we don't have a whole lot of say in repealing the travel rule for the users that are actually affected by it, because you aren't even affected by it. Mm-hmm. It's really people in that weird middle ground that get affected by it. And why would it? Why would the bank? Like, why would they even choose to? Because it's something that they already do with banks.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hit the second critical argument then that I could think of. I'm sure that there's many more that more people will come, and many of them will make very little sense. But as far as this one, fiat is KYC. Crypto is no KYC. It's permissionless, right? That's kind of the way things work. And when you start having these crypto banks, you know, why do I have to do KYC to touch Bitcoin? Well, because you don't have to at all, but you do have to KYC to use banks, which is what you're using. You're using a fiat service to buy something from another fiat service. The fiat is what introduces the KYC. And the crypto part is...
Actually, no, it's the custodial nature that introduced the KYC, not the fiat.
Yes.
It's holding someone else's money that's introducing the KYC.
Yes.
You could be 100% crypto. You could be 100% crypto, but if you're holding someone else's money, that's when KYC kicks in a vast majority of jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm. So, but the enforceability of that as pertains to the money itself is much more of a fiat thing. Now, I understand we're getting really... Mm-hmm. Like hair splitty kind of things here. But for example,
it's 100% enforceable if you hold someone else's money. It's very enforceable. It's not a fiat thing at all. As soon as you're holding someone's money, you're not a software, you're not a piece of software anymore.
Yeah.
Right. The reason why Bitcoin can go KYC, can go zero KYC, is because it's a piece of software that someone can download and just run.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, some services have become more of a service provider, but providing nodes, updating software that runs on the App Store. But by and large, it's just software.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a financial service. You do become a financial service when you hold people's money, and you will be hunted and targeted and regulated. And that's been true for quite a number of years.
Yeah. Now, I guess it comes more to like when you talk about enforceability, because when you use a bank, first off, you need the bank's permission to send money. Whereas, you know, with crypto, you don't. And there's an identity intricately tied to the account number on your bank, and there is not necessarily with crypto. And so because
only
of
in
all
self-custody,
that,
though, once again, it's only in self-custody is what you're saying is true.
Well,
crypto with a custodian has all of the requirements of fiat in a bank. And if not,
but
today,
that's what I'm saying is the money that interacts with the custodian up until it gets custodied. It's completely different with fiat and cryptos. Once it gets custody,
that
there
I agree.
It is.
And
that so
I agree.
Basically, when you're using an exchange, like, well, let's just say, or a brokerage like Coinbase, like you get a Coinbase account, you KYC, you buy the money, they're custodying it. When you withdraw it, it's out of that fiat world, right? It's now purely into the crypto world where, you know, it's proof of keys and that's it. Now, the argument would be, again, sorry for being so long-winded on this stuff, because you know you have to when you try to have intelligent nuance here. The argument there is that the crypto part of it doesn't have the KYC per se. And if you start introducing, and like a crypto wallet, for example, you don't have to prove your identity to use a usual non-custodial wallet, right? That's kind of the point of it. When you're introducing KYC assisting implementations into the actual wallet itself, the slippery slope.
I don't think you're assisting jack shit with AOPP. What are you assisting that in a KYC aspect? That KYC is already given up.
Yes, but
you've given up that KYC.
But KYC facilitating tools are being built into the app itself. And while that's a very, it's a philosophical, it's not technically, it's not that much of it's not a difference really. Philosophically, it kind of is, because now wallets that don't care what your identity is are building in functionality to make it easier to prove your identity. So
no, they're not at all. They're absolutely not. Remember I said, this is a weak ass proof. It is one of the weakest proofs you could ask for. I'm shocked it's even good enough.
Yes.
Right. How are you proving your identity by signing a message with a private key of an address that you're sending to an exchange? You're not proving your identity at all. Now, granted, if the wallet contained your identity information and you provided you sent that information from your wallet to an exchange with a signed message, then you're proving your identity in some way. But in no way is this protocol asking for that. None at all.
Yes. Well, let's take the slippery slope angle. What if this is the way it starts, but in the future, regulations will amend that say self-custodied wallets, when you can only legally transact to someone else whose identity you know. So AOPP becomes the standard protocol for receiving crypto to crypto transactions in a completely non-custodial, otherwise formerly non-KYC way. So if I want to send from Edge to, Koinomi, for example, if I did so without leveraging AOPP and signing, this is who the person behind the address is. If I don't do that, then I'd be a criminal. Again, that's not the law.
Well, then come talk to me at that point in time. Sure. Yeah. You want to project to that? Then come talk to me at that point in time and see how I feel, which my opinion right now is that no way in hell would that upgrade to AOPP be implemented. Mm-hmm. I'd sooner just go out of business and not support it. And then people just use open source applications if they choose to. Download something off a torrent site and use that. Right? Don't project that people and companies that support AOPP in its current existence will support an AOPP that requires actual KYC inside of the self-custody app. Mm-hmm. Like, no way. Just because we support one A doesn't mean we'll support B that you're projecting in the future. Now, like, no way in hell. Like, you cannot make that projection.
We're talking about the slippery slope of government, which is something I don't trust government at all, and I assume you trust very little as well.
No, I don't either. Like, the government might mandate that, but they're not going to mandate that because of the existence of an AOPP that has no KYC in it. Like, AOPP by itself has no KYC in it.
Yeah.
So just because that exists, how in the world can you make the connection that its existence would allow the government or motivate the government to implement something that does require self-custody to self-custody to have KYC? If they choose to do that, they'll choose to do that with or without any AOPP. This is a tiny little convenience protocol is all it is. It's a tiny convenience protocol. It wields no power with respect to what the government wants to do. It wields a whole lot more power in what we do know the government is enacting. It wields a lot of power in enabling people to get their money the hell off of an exchange. That's the power that it does wield. As far as government decisions, piddly.
Yeah.
Well, not even on the radar.
I guess that's the debate then, would be, is this the first step to, is this the first step to conditioning users to use KYC facilitating things in their self-custody apps? And is this conditioning businesses to non-custodial businesses like Edge to build compliance enhancing technology into their apps, to where if they had never done this first step and the government says, okay, now every self-custody app has to KYC to every user, it might be like, that's crazy, we'd never do that, that's way too difficult, we don't have anything in here, what are you talking about? But if everyone's already has AOPP,
it's a giant leap.
Okay.
It's a huge, huge leap. Like, going from a regular self-custody app like Edge is today to one that implements AOPP is purely a tiny bit of engineering. Mm-hmm. Going from AOPP as it stands today to some form of AOPP where we have to actually KYC users is a business model change.
Yeah.
It's a gigantic change. And I think people think that's slippery slope. No, like, it's not even close. It's hugely different. You're going from being a software provider to become a financial services provider with KYC information that you now have to protect with, I call it HIPAA laws,
that's not exactly what I'm saying here. It's a burden of proof on the actual user. So if the user controls their funds, they self-custody, if they send to an address without first doing their due diligence, as it were, and getting a signed message saying, this is John Smith you're sending to. If they send to an anonymous person, that could be criminalized in the future, possibly. Again,
Sure, right? Government could do almost anything, but where the hell does AOPP come into the play, and how is its existence today affecting the government's desire or ability to enact that regulation tomorrow? That's the part
Yeah, I
I
don't
can't
know.
make that connection in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
You say you don't know, then why even bring it up? It's like, I
Well,
don't see how there's even a slope there that connects A to B. The two are so distinctly far apart from each other.
yes,
That's
I
a part
guess
I'm
it's
having a lot of trouble connecting.
building in the automatic, the an automated or, convenient identity signing functionality
It's
into
not
a
an
thing.
identity signing. Remember that. It's not identity signing. Keep on bringing in that word. It's compliance,
Yes.
assisting. It's none of those things,
Yeah.
right? There's no identity there. It's cryptographic message signing. Technology
Yes.
that's existed for 20, 30 years. And we're making it where you're, instead of copying and pasting goddamn information back and forth, you scan a QR code to push a button. That's what's getting implemented. It's something that we actually should have had before this regulation.
Yeah, honestly, to be able to sign things.
Yeah, I'd like to be able to assign arbitrary things in
Yes,
an
I hate
easier way
having to
than copying and pasting.
open Electrum and doing all the stuff myself and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, so that, I guess, is where I think that that's where I kind of find out where the disagreement is on, again, I'm a neutral third party, right? This isn't really my world. I don't really know either way. And, I haven't made up my mind, right? And it's not up to me to make up my mind. Who cares what I think anyway? But I'm pretty sure that that's where the line is you see it for what it is, what the technology is right now. First off, I think almost no one understands that nuance that it's just a small signing thing. They think it's a KYCing thing, even though it's you like it's a very it's a subtle line of nuance of difference that is lost on most people, I would wager. I think most people in this discussion do not understand the nuance
They
between
don't understand the
AOPP and
protocol at all. And they don't
Yes.
understand the ramifications.
And the
I'll even give
so
them an analogy of how we use signing today
Yes.
and how it's not different from AOPP. So people call this is a, privacy, personal information proof, blah, 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 identity proof. That was the key word you used, identity proving
Yes.
technology. Well, what else is an identity proving technology? Guess what? SSH and public private key signatures to log into a remote server is
Yes.
identity proving technology. You're proving that you have the private key that is authorized to log into a server. Every DevOps person and server management person knows and has a private key on their computer that allows them to log into a server. That's digital signatures. The server sends a message, you sign it, goes right back, you're logged in. That's proving your quote unquote identity.
Yeah.
You could do this with a website. How many times have companies been formed to try to improve the experience of logging into a website? How do they
All the
improve
time.
it? As opposed to entering a username and password, you sign a message with your private key. That could be scanning a QR code to log into a website.
Yes.
Is that any different than using a private key to sign a message to give an address to a website? That website happening to be a Bitcoin exchange.
Apparently not, no.
That's an
It's not different.
identity proof. Now,
Yes.
what's behind that identity? Like, how much information does the website have? Fairly arbitrary. Some have barely any information, like Twitter. They have a handle and maybe an email. Some have a boatload of information, like a bank. Some have somewhere in between, like, a
Yeah.
Venmo. It's a signature proving that you are the owner of the account that you've created with this service.
Yes.
Just like when you enter a username and password. That is a way of proving. Signature is way better.
Of course.
We should be moving towards digital signatures to log into Web 2 sites. Is that identity enhancing technology? Or I don't know what you call it, identity proof and compliance enhancing technology?
Yeah, I got bad news for you. So I see frustration in your future, unfortunately, and I do not wish this upon you, but clearly this line of nuance which when you're explaining it like this, I'm on your side of this. I agree that this is not a big deal. I don't know. You know, I'm still the AOPP thing in general. I don't have a position. But as far as like, yes, this is not the same as KYC. This is just a message signing. I'm on that side of the nuance, but you see how the entire world, not the entire world, but almost everyone seems to have completely missed.
I think it's actually the noisy minority, I'll be honest.
I don't think
that 99% of crypto users or even 51% of crypto users give a damn about AOPP.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think they do. Among the people who do, I think 90%
don't understand it.
Missed the point. Amongst even the ones who don't care, I think that 95% maybe missed the point. And what I could see is, as you're saying, like, no, it's not the same thing. I can foresee a time in the future when someone implements an actual KYC protocol, and then and then people like you
come ask me then.
And stuff are saying this is terrible, and they're saying, well, no, it's just like the AOPP thing you just already did. No, it's not the same. It's not the same. But they will still be the 90% of people who are not going to understand and just say, no, it's just like the thing you did. You said that was okay, so this is going to be okay. And then you say, no, it's different. And what we do is,
well, it's going to be lost on them. I hate to say it, but I don't like to bow down to idiots.
Yeah.
Right? If people are going to be stupid, idiotic, and not look into what they're complaining and bitching about,
yes,
then I'm not going to dumb myself down to that level. Like, mm-hmm. I actually will go bother and analyze things and present actual thorough analysis of the concerns, especially when it comes down to privacy. Like, I'll analyze it to the T, to the best of my technical capabilities, and present and move forward with how I honestly feel is the right path. And for someone to then project that in the future, I won't do that just because I agreed to something that they deem as similar, even though in reality it's 100 times different, to project that I would agree to that, I think this is horribly unfair.
Yeah.
So
it's true.
To all the people that have,
here we are.
Here we are. But I think it's proof that most people don't actually analyze a damn thing. They're just sheep.
It's true.
It's true. Admittedly, a lot of the world is sheep. I think the past 2 years has proven that. And now people in the crypto world, there's some aspect of sheep as well.
Absolutely.
And there also might be an aspect of trying to become the champion. And if you hear of a handful of people that complain about it, that don't understand, and maybe to you as a wallet developer, you're like, well, it doesn't matter to us one way or another that much. And, oh, look, we can suddenly rise like cream to the top by claiming to be the champion of the people, even if we're not, and leverage that in our favor, than they do. I think it's cheap, it's short-sighted, and it's not really doing the users a service. All right.
You're
appealing to the short-sighted idiots that don't quite understand, and championing something just to kind of make almost like a marketing push. It becomes just a marketing ploy.
Yeah, I agree. Well, this will be a great thing. This will be a great conversation to come back to in a few years. And
let's see what AOPP 2.0 looks like.
Well, that's
and whether
what
or not
saying.
I like it or not.
This might be very predictive of the way, you know, the and so if you're tearing your hair out in frustration at people conflating two completely different things in the future, at least you will have had some fair warning that it was coming, at least for me, you know.
Oh, so I don't think I needed that warning. The short-sightedness of a lot of people in the community has kind of proven that. And so I think you're going to find, what you're probably going to find is, if that kind of regulation comes down the pipe, there's companies that never touched AOPP that'll implement it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. That don't even don't know the implications of AOPP, don't understand it, but they're just like, we shall bow down. Sure. Right.
Yeah,
AOPP is kind of very optional right now for all the companies that are building similar products that could integrate it. Like, what was it, like five companies were mentioned, and five products were mentioned in this entire discussion? There's like 100 plus out there that aren't even being mentioned, all self-custody. And when regulations come down, who's really going to try to fight the fight? All right. That's going to be the true test. That's when we'll see who's really standing by what they do honestly feel is a kind of unfair, unfair regulation at the time that it comes.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Don't measure the companies that are responding today. I think that's not meaningful. Mm-hmm. Measure the ones that respond when it really has an impact. And that's what I ask people to do. Like, this isn't fair judgment right now. It will, I feel like it has the possibility to come down. Judge all those five and then soon to be like 100, 200, 300 different companies, self-custody apps, wallets, whatever you want to call them. Judge them then when it really matters.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. That's what I will do. And this is going to be interesting to see unfolding. Well, thanks a ton for being on. This is quite the nuanced, quite the involved, quite the important discussion, yet the discussion that no one knows anything about. And I have a feeling the view counts are not going to be very good on this video because no one really cares too much. Yet this is very important, a very important distinction talk to have. But so
there was definitely enough chatter on Twitter about it that you might have some decent view counts for those that have come across the term.
Yeah, well, for sure. We'll see how that turns out. But thanks for lending your time for this, as always. And yeah, everyone have a good one.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, subscribe so you don't miss an episode and donate to support the show by going to my Cointree page. That's cointr.ee/thedesertlinks and leave a message with your donation. Check out the show's sponsors. Live on crypto with BitRefill. Buy absolutely anything with crypto with Shop and Bit. Avoid content censorship with Odyssey. Protect your privacy online with NordVPN. Get paid to search with Presearch. All links are in the show notes.